who's the best show here?
Best show! Best show! Best show! Yeah!
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology, and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Oh yeah, another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. This is episode 208 for September 5th, 2007. Welcome everybody. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. It's just me and Dan tonight. Link and Alan can't make it. They're feeling a little under the weather. So me and Dan are going to carry on with the show. And we have a fantastic guest with us. We have Andrew Gregg from Kulu, which is a really cool, interesting product. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
What exactly is Kulu, and what are you guys aiming for as far as a market?
Kulu, what we're working towards is to go basically where no PC and networks are going right now because of their price points. So using an LX800 Geode, so something similar to the one laptop per child that requires no fan, low heat, very low power, and ideally no moving parts, because we're getting towards the CF install that's just an embedded version of Ubuntu with just running a browser, and then using Google Apps to go along with that.
So I see you offer two main products. You have the Kulu Thin Client and the Kulu Net Appliance. How do they differ, and what are the feature sets that set them apart from each other?
The difference is hard drive. It looks like a thin client, but it can also be used as a standalone mini PC. So you just put an 80 gig hard drive inside of it and load it with Ubuntu, which we preload, and you can use it as a standalone. The reason we did this is some companies had offices, satellite offices, that only had like 5 PCs in it and didn't have a large enough pipe to be able to reach it with their terminal server for LTSP, and they wanted to procure something that was the same. So this made it easy. Plus, people that haven't had an experience with Ubuntu in the business world or education didn't want to have to set up a terminal server to have an experience, but wanted something small they could show their boss. So that's kind of how it was born.
Now, the thin client, you obviously have to have a server running in the background. You just mentioned the Linux Terminal Server project. Do you guys offer any server that's specific to your product, or you just go with the Linux Terminal Server project?
Right now, we're the only certified thin client with Ubuntu, so what happens is that people get the thin clients or a thick one, and then they come back to us looking for ideas on servers. And some people like to get their own and have their own flavors, and they're different types of shops as far as what they like for hardware. So we help guide them in certain areas, but we do have ones that we recommend, mostly AMD servers.
Now, how powerful are these boxes as far as processor and memory?
It's the LX800 Geode, so it's 500 megahertz. But with Ubuntu on it, it actually works really well. And the reason is the One Laptop Per Child project, Google put a couple $1 million in, Ubuntu put a couple $1 million in, and so did AMD. So there's a lot of stuff a lot of eyeballs, a lot of development that's happening on this platform. That makes us look good because, ideally, a lot of stuff that you'd like to do, like widescreen or plug in your iPod or whatever, just simply works on these things because it's something that they all have in common.
Now, I could see a lot of benefits of using these products. For instance, this would be something really great, for instance, to put on in grandma's house. You just give her a box all set up and ready to go, put it on the internet, and she's off on her way. Also, I could see this as possibly a replacement for businesses where they have specific applications running on a thin client for whatever department's using it.
Yeah, we kind of focus on small to medium-sized business in the emerging markets. Our biggest market is actually Europe right now, and second is Brazil. So there are other people in the market in the States that are looking at the retail market, and there are some people that, you know, just get tired of supporting their friends and family with Windows and get these and set their friends and family up with it. So that it does happen, but most of our business is small to medium-sized businesses, mostly schools, for thin clients and for thick clients. You can also use it as a bit of a hybrid where you can have some stuff running on the actual unit itself, like the OS and Firefox, and everything else back on the server. So it depends on what people are looking for.
It's real interesting. Now, are you guys just offering the hardware, or are you also offering support and services as well?
Yeah, we do offer support. And people do contact us because, especially if they get a thick client and they don't have, they don't want to be able to set it up as far as supporting it themselves, then that's something that that we do. So there are support contracts that we do. The unique part that we do is with Google Applications, we have a support contract that strips out the support for OpenOffice. So it just does the OS and Firefox go with Google Apps.
So your approach is a little different than your competition. I mean, out there, the competition I've seen is Zambu. Those guys seem to be going for more of a service model, or you guys, or it looks like it's more geared towards hardware.
Yeah, with Zambu, it's residential and U.S.-centric, where the emerging markets and looking at SMEs and SOHOs, and also the educational and some government. So it is two different things. But we are moving more towards a model where Humber College and Lakehead up in Thunder Bay, they just, you know, wholesale went to Google Applications. So what happens right now is that people go to Google and they get Google Applications and they use it as a lightweight version of Microsoft Office to replace that. And it's a lot less expensive, with $50 a year for support, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because they pay their bills by, you know, putting little advertisements down the side of your email when you put things on. So then they find out about Firefox, then they ask Google, and Google says, hey, you know, try this thing called Ubuntu. People go to the Ubuntu website, and at the very top of North America, they find we're the only certified thin client. And since we're at a price point where it's impulse buy, $199 or $299 for with a hard drive, they click, they try them, and they usually come back. And we end up with helping them with reducing energy costs and making it work a little bit better with LTSP.
This small device would be fantastic as a MythBox front end. Have you guys tested using this as a MythBox front end?
Yeah, there's a YouTube video of me showing a demonstration of this as a wireless Myth TV front end, and it works really well.
So it works okay with standard definition piping out to a TV?
720 by 480 is what works on this, and we've got it to the point where, and this is something that we did that was unique, was getting 720 by 480 to work on this. AMD and everybody else had issues, including Red Hat, to try and get it to work on this processor. So Brian Code is the gentleman on our team that made that work. It only uses about 10 to 20% of the processor to be able to give you that, which is fairly amazing for something like this.
So obviously guys work with the hardware vendor to tweak it and get it just right.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just that close to being an FPGA, right? Because everything runs on this chip by itself, right? So.
How did you get the video out to a television?
There are things you can buy in order to be able to get different types of outputs, but VGA is what we use for the demonstration and what we recommend to people, because You can justify, and a lot of people do, getting rid of the CRTs and TVs by reducing your energy costs and getting something smaller. For, you know, I just got a, for $300 Canadian, I just got a, I don't know, 21 or 22 inch ViewSonic. So it doesn't make much sense to pay 30, 40, 50, 60 bucks for a dongle to go to something that's not going to be as nice to surf the internet on by any means.
No, I meant with regards to the Myth TV stuff. But no, I see what you're saying there too. You're right.
Might as well just get a widescreen monitor, you know, 20, 21, 22 inch. A lot of people do try to make it work with TV, but if you do the numbers, the electricity cost and the quality, it just doesn't make any sense these days. It's just better to go out and buy a monitor.
I see here that the ThinkLine only uses less than 5 watts. That's amazing.
Yeah, what's amazing about these things is that there's no heat sink. Not only have a fan, there's no heat sink, and there's no thermal pad that goes onto the aluminum. That's how efficient these processors have become. So it's really weird to open it up and you see the chip bare, and right on top of it is where the hard drive goes. So it's very low heat.
So I'm looking at the pictures here. You got some USB ports. You got an Ethernet port. You get your video connection.
Daddy.
So all the connections are pretty much USB then, for your keyboard, your mouse.
Yep.
Do you have a list of supported hardware or recommended hardware, or do you just expect to work with most generic hardware that's out there?
It works with most generic hardware, but most of our installations people specify and ask for things to be pre-configured, or they simply go to our, you know, kurulu.org, or they just email us, and we just keep populating the information on the kurulu.org, the wiki.
Now, you talk about kurulu.org. I guess that's the community website?
Yeah, it's a start of one. There's a point of sale that's open source that a guy in Tilsonburg is doing. There's lots of other projects that are out there that people have, you know, turned these into little, you know, Asterix appliances, storage appliances, firewalls. There's lots of different things that people have bought them and played with them. And we're trying to encourage people to put their information up. And ideally what we're looking to do is we were looking for a piece of hardware that would be somewhat ubiquitous. So Champaign-Urbana, Illinois is where there's a wireless project called CU Wireless, and they do open source mesh network nodes. And they liked them and played with them, and people use them for that, for Myth TV front ends, for Ubuntu desktops, for Asterisk servers. The reason we were doing that is we wanted to get something that was ubiquitous so that we could get the volume up, so that the open source community could finally have a voice. And instead of having to, you know, figure out drivers out of the tailpipe of Microsoft, you can actually be buying enough volume to tell them what you want, you know, kind of like the OpenMoco project, right?
This would be fantastic in a family environment where each kid could have their own thin client and their own Linux terminal server project in the back end where your network shares.
Well, it's kind of funny you said that, because I've got three kids, and 4 or 5 years ago, that's what I started out doing, actually, is that I got tired of them having their own PCs and TVs and multimedia stuff, and it just was nuts. So I put in a terminal server and put in thin clients throughout the house, and that's how it actually started.
You hear that, Dan?
Yeah. a couple of questions here. I was just looking over your fact. One of the things I was curious about is the version of Ubuntu you have on there is just the standard version of Edgy, correct?
Yep.
I'm curious as to why you haven't gone with Feisty yet. I mean, well, could you get this and then upgrade to Feisty?
You can upgrade to Feisty, and there's people running Gutsy on it. Some people running just long-term support for business. It all depends. Feisty, we learned a lesson with Feisty. Feisty had some issues with drivers, especially video drivers. And there were a lot of people out there, unfortunately, that found out that, you know, when the candidate was supposed to be released, that it didn't seem to be released. And then when the full release came out, it seemed to be the candidate. So there was an issue, and people ended up spending 2 or 3 days getting their server back up and running. Because, you know, just trying to be able to get into the GUI was a little tough. So with the rapid deployment and rapid development and rapid release of Ubuntu, we've learned to try and stay a gen behind for most of the people that we deal with. There are some, you know, brave people that want to, you know, upgrade to Feisty and Gutsy and play with stuff, because there's some neat features to those. But most people that just want to surf the internet and do some documents and stuff stick with Edgy.
So will you be going to Feisty when Gutsy comes out, or are you going to just stick with LTS releases?
We're looking at going, we're going to skip Feisty and we're going to go to Gutsy, but that's once everything's comfortable with Gutsy. Gutsy seems to have a lot more advantages to it, especially widescreen, and everything seems to be widescreen these days for everything that's being sold as far as monitors goes. They've decided that TVs and monitors are now the same thing and can get large productions up at the same size. So that's something that works well in Gutsy.
Now, I noticed that you say you can install any hard drive that you want on here, provided it is 80 gigabytes or less. Why is there an 80 gigabyte limitation? Is that because of the chipset? I mean, or is that...
I don't even know. It's just what's recommended. I have seen larger ones in it, but what happens is it can be a little bit slower with laptop hard drives, and the power consumption and the power supply may have some issues in heat because there's zero air movement inside the box.
Okay. So, I mean, would you guys really recommend swapping in and out of hardware on this thing?
We've tried all different types of RAM and all different types of hard drives, and there's been very few issues. So if you want to be able to play with it, like the first one I ever got, I tore apart 3 or 4 dead laptops that I had here and took RAM and hard drives and put them in it and played with it, and it worked fine.
You guys seem to be really, really focused on power consumption. And you know, reducing the amount of power consumed, that seems to be really important to you. Why is that, aside from it being ecologically sound? Are there any other reasons?
From a business standpoint, with Al Gore being the alien that's somewhat landed that, you know, everybody's focusing on for the moment, to save the Earth, I guess, kind of like a science fiction movie. Everybody will stop their wars and stuff if, you know, some alien lands. So I guess Al Gore is that alien, and he's motivated the market along with some others to be able to move this way. So there's regulations, especially in Europe, from cradle to grave, and carbon emission issues. And I've had lots of companies call us and say that, you know, Microsoft makes oil and Intel makes SUVs, and that's all we have available in the marketplace today. So it's refreshing to see a Prius or a hybrid version of, you know, a desktop. And that's really what is unique about us. You know, we stick to Ubuntu. We don't go to a bunch of different OSs. And we stick to, you know, using very, you know, low energy, because here's a good one for us right now. And we just sold 41 units to a school in Latvia. And the reason is because a lot of Europe was wired in the 1970s and wasn't very well wired for electricity. And they've got 6 7-year-old HP pavilions, and when they turn all those on and they turn the air conditioning on, and those PCs are fighting the air conditioning, it actually turns their power off, the fuses or the breakers go, because they just simply do not have the power to be able to outfit their schools, homes, and businesses with PCs. So, and the new PCs these days take, you know, 300, 400, 500. I've seen the new Intel station that takes 850 watts. So that's all the lights on in your house and a few things on besides that.
There you go. That's a cool-looking little device.
definitely. Andrew, we got a question from the IRC. Someone wants to know, can you boot off of a USB device?
Absolutely. We get people that buy them as a thin client for $199, and then they just, they put damn small Linux on it, or Puppy or Pepper or whatever they want to put on it, and put it on a USB and play with it that way. And read-only memory is kind of nice, because then you just turn it off, turn it back on. And if they want to use external storage, they, either a server or just a USB, full-size hard drive. So there's lots of different combinations. It's very flexible that way.
So how good do these systems do with multimedia, like Flash or video playback, and possibly external DVD drives, playing movies back on DVD? How well do they perform?
Playback for DVDs and stuff is fine. Like I have an older USB full-size hard drive with movies and stuff on it, and it plays back fine through the USB port. When you get to Flash, Flash works, but it's not perfect. What's nice is that the Apple TV and the iPod and stuff, they're now, I don't know if simulcasting is the best way to put it or not, but YouTube and everybody else is going to this mobile format that works really well with the Apple iPhone. So that's really taking care of the issue. And we really didn't spend too much time on getting Flash to work, because we knew with working with Google that that was something where they had to reach a much wider market anyway, and Flash is just a resource hog. So it was something that was going to get fixed anyway. We didn't have to try to make it work all that hard.
Could you be a little more specific on exactly what you're talking about there with Apple and Google and some kind of streaming technology? What do you know what that is?
Yeah, I don't know what it's called specifically, but I just know that if you go to YouTube,
Google Apps is a customizable package of applications that takes
the Apple iPhone for people to be able to, and it shows the whole commercial showing you watching YouTube videos, and then it pulls back and you see it's on their mobile device. In order to be able to do that, of course, it's definitely not Flash that they're using on that device. It's something else that Apple has come up with a few other companies. I don't remember what it was. All I know is that it works really well.
And that'll work on the Hulu?
Oh yeah, it works really well on the Hulu.
Interesting.
As far as the developer community that you're trying to build around Hulu.org, are you guys trying to push it in any directions, or are you just going to let the community flesh itself out? Is there any particular area where you'd like to see the community step up?
Well, it's kind of a come-as-you-are type of thing. What happens is that people play with it and have some fun, and then some guys in Tilsonburg created a point of sale that's fairly simple for the healthcare industry, and we really like those types of projects. So we see if we can help them by ideally bringing to the market and saying, do you guys want to do development, support, patches, updates? What part do you like best? And then we bring it to a wider audience as a sales and marketing company to other markets, like Brazil and Europe and all over the world.
A really cool piece of technology. Wow.
This looks fantastic. Now, let me ask you. You talk about using the stock install of Ubuntu, which is the GNOME desktop. Are there any ideas maybe of going to something a little more lighter, like maybe XFCE, or one of the other light desktops or window managers?
Yeah, we actually started with XFCE, but then GNOME became better and better and quicker, and so did OpenOffice. And the chipset keeps getting better and better. There's an LX900 that comes out with 600 megahertz fairly shortly, and the RAM we're putting in it now is 512, 400 megahertz instead of 333. So the combination of those things have made it so that you can run KDE on this with, if you go to KDE, look, or at .org, you can download a theme for Windows or Apple, and you know, some pretty intensive, you know, resource-intensive stuff, and it still runs fine. Of course, the Windows theme, of course, will slow it down to the point where people will believe that it looks like Windows. So.
Slow it down. So now, I take it. Go ahead, Pat. I'm sorry. Don't want to talk about the top
been
of
any
you.
There haven't been any requests to install Vista on there?
Yeah, we get people that phone up at, and email us saying they would like to do Citrix and other things, and we recommend other people to work with because it's just not a great experience. Vista requires so much resources, you know. Just to fire up a browser just, you know, requires more than what this thing will really give you. So 1 gig of RAM is a lot to dedicate to a browser. So just so they can be the police to make sure that you're paying for all your content. So that's we just don't go there. Anybody that wants to deal with it. And the reason is, too, is that there are hardware vendors out there in politics of dancing and business. And, you know, you really have to pick your sides, because if you're dealing with, you know, certain entities out there, they're fairly abrasive if you decide to do other things. So it's better just to stay the course. So we do not get involved in any Microsoft deployments at all.
So if you actually, I know Mad Dog, John Mad Dog Hall has espoused this device, said it's great. I mean, have you actually met John Hall yourself?
John actually is our CTO, and he's actually at my house, usually staying over for about a week or 2 weeks every couple months.
He's a great guy.
So he's incredible, and the stories are, you know, amazing, absolutely amazing about, you know, being there when and helping to influence and foster people along the way. So I thought it was amazing when I met him, and he talked about Mad Dog's Mansion and microbrewery and quite a few other things after that. And we really shared a passion for being able to lower the barrier to entry to help people to socially and economically uplift themselves by making computers and networks and stuff available where it's just not feasible today. And ideally, we believe that if people can do that, then, you know, we won't have the next Al Qaeda come from Africa if we can, you know, at least get something into their hands so that they can join us as far as a voice and being able to self-publish and, you know, do things that. One example would be, you know, there was a 17-year-old kid in Africa that was literally on a dirt floor type of hut, and Doctors Without Borders was, you know, there. There was a mother that had AIDS, and they were helping her out. And the doctor looked up at this broken chalkboard and a bunch of books in the corner and said, you know, what are you doing on that chalkboard? He says, you know, I have to know math because I'm a doctor, but it looks like you're passionate about math. And there were books on Mathematica, and the equations were pretty cool. So he took them down and then sent them off to MIT. MIT said, what group is this that you have found in what university? And he said, it's a 17-year-old kid in Africa. Well, that 17-year-old kid is now at MIT. So it's human potential, actually, is the resource that we're squandering today. And unfortunately, there may be lots of answers that are laden out there in society and in people, because we're a very small part of the population of the Earth over here that is lucky enough to have, you know, connectivity and resources to, you know, use our creativity to do things. So we're passionate about making sure that we can get through to those people. But unlike the One Laptop per Child project, we're going to start with large areas like, you know, Sao Paulo in Brazil, and parts in Europe and stuff like that, so you can make the economics work to get to the, you know, the kid under the banyan tree type thing.
So I'm curious, Andrew, what drew you to creating the Kulu device?
What it was is just seeing that businesses today have too many Sammy salesmen stopping by at the end of a quarter to sell you something. same thing with applications, middleware, all this stuff is just extremely frustrating. So I was hoping that, you know, with open source, you could simply put it all together with all the different projects on, you know, a common hardware platform, everything on, you know, something magical like, you know, Ubuntu, with like, you know, Linux MCE and, you know, Fire and stuff. It's really cool to see that everybody started to focus on something like this. And then make it enterprise ready, and then put it out in the marketplace so you could help businesses in a way that, like we're doing a pilot right now for a Windfall Ecology Center. These guys are tapped into, you know, Greenpeace, Sierra Club. There's, you know, David Suzuki, many different things that are really cool. Stephen Lewis Foundation. So, and schools. So what's neat is that we're trying to come up with a model where we simply measure the electricity they're using right now for their IT. And once they've got Google applications, the migration and integration has already been done. We come in and put in these boxes with a terminal server. And we just, ideally, we're working on this model where we just take the difference, where it's, you know, $10 to $18 a month electricity savings, depending on where you are. And we ask only for the electricity savings. And we're working with some utilities that do green power to do just that. So on your utility bill for, you know, certified green power, you would be paying a premium of, you know, 20-30%, depending on where you are in the world with some of these green power providers. And what we're asking for is a business model of your support, your hardware, the installation, the OS, Firefox, the server, and your support of all that and maintenance would simply be paid for in the new efficiency in the cost savings of electricity. I know it sounds like a stretch, but we're actually fairly close to that.
So prior to developing the Kulu or being involved with the Kulu project, had you been using Linux and other free and open source software?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I've worked with other companies with you know, in business development, and had played with Linux for quite some time. So I knew what was available in the marketplace enough to be able to put things together.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And I see that you are certified in Novell NCLS and Nortel Fiber Optics.
Yeah, it's pretty much a hodgepodge. I've done a little bit of everything. So
now, have you?
I have a question.
I have a question
regarding the hardware, Andrew. This stuff is all customized for you, or is this like an OEM branded box that you've customized and had tweaked specifically for you?
It's an OEM. There's a few different versions out there that are in the marketplace. The trick is to be able to come up with cash to buy them in thousands to make it economic, and then to be able to put your order in and wait, you know, 6, 8, 12 weeks to be able for them to come in. That's the kind of the tough part. And we price them to the point where, you know, we're really looking for the services that come with us. And we don't really get into that just yet because we're just starting to ramp up, but a lot of it does come back to us in you know, companies that want basically to distance themselves from liability, some type of an insurance program, you know, want to be able to make sure there's somebody to call if something goes wrong, somebody to remotely monitor and manage stuff for them. And that naturally seems to come as we go to deploy these stuff in the conversations. So that's how we're ramping up. We're more of a services-based company. Our next step is to actually say if you sign a 1, 2, or 3-year contract for support and you get Google applications from us, then you don't have to pay for the hardware. It's just included. We'll ship it and set it up.
Because someone in the IRC had mentioned, if we're asking a question, whether you guys had taken a look at some of the VIA chipsets that they've released recently. Maybe they posted a link to Linux devices.
Yeah, there's VIA and there's others that are in the marketplace. We played with tons of them. I've got, you know, there's a stack that we played with, and we've watched what others have. You know, the Zonbus are really cool, but there's been ones of those that have, you know, locked up because of heat issues. For business reasons, there's just more eyeballs and more development, and you know that, you know, the LX800 is going to be here for some time because the investment by, you know, AMD, Google, Red Hat, you know, OLPC, that combination and Ubuntu that the LX800 is, you know, is going to be focused on for quite some time. So it's the longevity of the chipset and the energy efficiency. They're just, we haven't found anything that comes anywhere close.
So basically it hits the sweet spot as far as the power that you can get, how green it is, and the price for what you're looking to sell it for.
Yeah. The reason is that it's not very well known because it's not really all that friendly to a Microsoft or a Citrix environment. It's much more friendly toward the Linux. Right, it's a sweet spot for Linux. It works really well for that. And with the AMD, it's just a very good relationship.
Now, you guys are based in Ottawa, Canada, correct?
No, we're actually in Toronto, and we're in the process of opening up an office in Costa Rica.
Oh, interesting. Now, you talked about pushing in and developing markets. Are you guys looking to sell these, you know, in North America as well, besides from your shop off your website?
In North America, because the margins are so thin on this, if people are looking to, you know, partner with us or be resellers, it has to be a service-based company that's going to add some type of value locally. You know, our API or ASP model with Google is generally what happens. That seems to work best for us as far as partnering. In North America, it's not our biggest sales, but recently, because of tight budgets in Vista, schools like Humber and others have gone to Google Apps, and there's lots of others that are following in education. In October, I'm in Indiana, and there's a gentleman named David there that's, you know, spoken of 100,000 desktops. First time I've ever heard these words put together: open source and K-12, so kindergarten to grade 12. It's actually for people in education to come see what open source can do for them. And even in California, looking at 500,000 units of desktops that are going to be open source based. So it is starting to happen in the United States. So it's very interesting to see that, you know, things are starting to turn. The tsunami is starting to kind of come back in here with, with Microsoft Office, it's a $500 a year thing. With Google Apps, it's $50 a year, and they take care of storage. They take care of, you know, collaboration tools and so many other things. Mail, you know, calendar. It's just a no-brainer. That's why you're seeing, if you go to the Google Apps page for the customers, that every day there are huge testimonials. You know, GE, Procter & Gamble, there's Salesforce.com, there's, you know, lots of small to medium-sized businesses and tons of schools. And it's simply just the economics that are driving it. Not because it's Linux or open source based, it's just because the economics are, you know, just extremely compelling.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, that seems to be the in with Linux, you know. Not so much that it's good for freedom and, you know, sharing ideas and it's green. It boils down to how much can you save with it for a lot of people.
Yeah. Like, I just got back from California. I was down at Mountain View at Google's head office. Got to meet the executives, some executives from OpenMoco. And I'm actually on the phone with them at 10 o'clock tonight to look at different markets for their product, to couple it, because we think it'd be really cool to have a Neo phone, like an OpenMoco, with Wi-Fi that, you know, somehow through a hotspot you could, you know, pick up a signal and go back to your Kulu box, which can also have some asterisks on it, and then you've got your pops and dids hanging at the back end, and wow, you know. That's pretty powerful. You're going, you know, powerful going back and forth between, you know, your unlocked GSM, you know, that you put in it, like a Rogers type stuff here. And then when you want to, you can go to the Wi-Fi. And if you're really cool, you can just use the data side of the cellular network and then bypass, you know, minutes and long distance. It's when this stuff hits the market first quarter of next year, it's really going to disrupt the market. Telcos are looking at this thing like it's got three heads, because anything with Wi-Fi and an unlocked phone is, it's just, it's going to be interesting. sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it is up in Canada, but here in the United States, a lot of the cell phone providers, they're very close, and what they'll often do is they'll disable features on a particular phone, you know, just so they can lock, you know, what you can do with it, and it's very close, you know, they're very protective and secretive, you know. You know, but that's very cool that you guys are looking to do that with the phone systems. I think that's phenomenal.
Well, there's Seattle Wireless, you know, there's mesh networks that are in different cities all over the place. So it depends, because like the internet, right, 70, 80, 90% of the people that you speak to, like the average as far as the masses, are just dealing with people fairly local, right? It's only 10 to 30% maximum that is actually international. I know the Linux community, of course, it's much more international, but typically for the masses, it's, you know, like Sasha at CU Wireless explained to me in a pretty profound way. He's, you know, in the middle of a cornfield, and, you know, where his university and stuff is there, and 2 hours south of Chicago, nothing else around. And when he, you know, would ping something, he would find it goes all the way up to Chicago and then comes right back down to his neighbor's house, right? And the phone system is spoken hub-based, a lot similar. So it made a lot more sense to have community-based, you know, like a utility-type model or a co-op. And we love mesh networks. We love the idea that you could, you know, hang these, and some people have. Like Seattle Wireless uses these little boxes as a device to be able to make BitTorrent pretty much real-time, which is pretty cool. that's a lot of fun. So Juiced and the rest of the guys that are, you know, having fun trying to make a go of it in the corporate world, this stuff already exists if you know some people, you know, in Seattle Wireless, right? So,
are you guys hiring?
We take a model somewhat like Ubuntu with, you know, with Mark. So we like people that come up and say, look, I've got a project, I've been doing certain things, and, you know, we hook them up with different projects. So we're more of a portal to be able to, or, you know, somewhat of a, for a better phrase, I guess, dating service to pull people together with different projects. It depends on what they want to do. We have this portal that we're building called the Reciprocity Portal. The company that we've incorporated is called Needs, Wants, and Desires. So what it means is that we're open sourcing everything, sales, marketing. The OpenMoco guys are definitely doing this. You can see by the YouTube commercials that are out there. It's pretty wild. But we're open sourcing the whole business so that you can go to the web portal and say, I know somebody that could use this as an organization or as an individual, and do a referral process. And somebody says, oh, I know that company or whatever, and I'm in that area, and I'd like to do local integration and support. Somebody else says, you know, I want to do, you know, XYZ, you know, an API, or, you know, I want to do an AFP model, or I want to provide connectivity. And we haven't figured out how it's all going to flow yet, but we want to make it so that anybody can get involved with the process and then be compensated based on what fair market value is for the chain, you know, for whatever link in the chain that they do.
So you're looking for real, you know, open source, go-getter type people that are willing to get out there and do their thing and see how you can integrate it with your box.
Yeah, right? Like some good examples are, you never know where you're going to go, you know, when you do these things. The gentleman that created Firefox, you know, I stayed at his house while I was down in California. And, you know, here's a 16, 17-year-old kid from New Zealand, right, that, you know, now works at Google and has a house on the hill, right? So you never know where this is going to go. But as long as you stick to what you're really good at, and stay away from trying to become competent in stuff that other people would like you to be competent at. I find that people seem to, you know, gravitate to a fairly nice place in life. So we're just trying to create an environment that'll foster that fairly naturally without somebody in HR looking at you, you know, wondering if there's something between your teeth that, you know, bugs them so they don't hire you that day, right? It's much more performance-based.
Pretty cool. So what do you see this going? I mean, you see this, you know, we talked about educational market, developing world. Any other areas that you might want to try to get into?
Well, you know, ideally we want to get to the point where, you know, we got an email from the guys at CERN, the Super Collider, and where they created the internet and stuff. And, you know, it's again, I'm not all that technical and don't know all the history, but I thought it was pretty cool that they bought some units because they said that you know, space heat, electricity was, you know, an issue, and they said that grid computing was definitely the future. And something that, you know, I've always been, you know, spouting off at the mouth that, you know, scares people sometimes, but I really like the idea of using something like ultra-wideband with half a gigabit wireless, and then, you know, throwing in some Beowulf between the units with a nice, you know, big fat wireless pipe as the backplane, and then turn into one giant squid cache. So there is no centralized server, and if you don't have to plug into a grid because power consumption is so little, you're now pretty independent, and there's nobody that can really take away, you know, anything from you. A lot like the One Laptop per Child project, but more in a, you know, a fixed situation type stuff. Because wireless mesh networks have issues with a bunch of floating, you know, nodes. It's not perfect.
Very cool. Excellent stuff. I'd love to get my hands on one of these things and play with it. Now, as far as the developer community, are you offering any discounts for developers to buy these boxes and maybe do specific development for it?
Yeah, it's on a case-by-case basis, right? It's, if there's somebody out there that's working on, you know, OLTC, or they're working on something that we find interesting, you know, we've provided units. We also have provided units to a privately held school in Kenya for abused girls, and also to, you know, organizations here locally, because we like to act global and act local at the same time. So, you know, for the developer community, if they've got something that they're doing that's interesting that we can, you know, see a market for, you know, we've made discounts. Some people we've sent units to for free. We've done wacky things where people have, you know, we actually, you know, use Joomla, so that's, you know, it actually means that I have the keys to the website, which is not always a good idea, so I'll go in and mess with stuff. And then people email us and go, you know, your website sucks, we can't really navigate it, there are problems, I don't get a clear picture of what's going on, I can't get the information I need as we start it up. And some of them were, you know, they used some interesting words when they emailed us, which, you know, I took with a grain of salt, which was pretty cool. But some of those, you know, went and bought a Zonbu or bought other stuff, and, you know, we turned around and emailed them and said, hey, you know what, you were right, and a lot of the stuff that you told us about, oh, you were absolutely dead on, and please look at the website, we've made some changes, and, you know, made some changes to our literature and stuff that we're doing. And they thought it was kind of weird that we actually contacted them, because most of the emails we get like that, you can tell these people have a lot of time on their hands, and, you know, they sent quite a few emails like this, but maybe not a lot of responses because of the way they sent them. So we're happy to get those, because we love that, because we want to be able to respond to the market like that. It's a market-driven economy, so we want to be able to get those emails. And some of those win a prize. Like, we'll send them back an email and say, thanks. There's a lot of stuff we were missing on the website. You were right. There were things that were missing. You know, we didn't pick up the phone at the right time. We didn't get back to you. So here's a Kulu. Go play with it. All you have to do is, you know, write a very honest, you know, thing on this as far as telling them how it compares to, you know, other things that you've been using, right? And we have, you know, transcendental meditation guys that are monks out in Vancouver that are using it. They're off-grid to, you know, large schools, prisons, old folks' homes. There's lots of manufacturing. It's just amazing. You know, I got a phone call this morning where they're looking for 100,000 units a month. So it's it is very interesting how much of an interest there is in this.
So where's the Tech Show discount for our listeners to possibly get one of them? I know I might be interested in one, get one.
Yeah, we could knock off $25 on the unit for them if they decide they wanted to get one and mention the Tech Show.
Oh, cool.
Get one for $25. Awesome.
We could knock $25 off.
Oh, that's still, I mean, even without the $25, it's an awesome price, and it's an awesome device.
Yeah.
Pat will be selling some stuff to get one of those today. That is neat.
Cool.
And you should commend yourself for doing an awesome job. I mean, my hat's off to you.
This is a very cool product. This is really exciting stuff. I really think this is like the future for a lot of people for computing, you know. You talk about like, you know, Apple comes out and says, you know, they're trying to create an appliance, you know, that's going to do this and that. You know, this is the right way to do it. You guys are doing low power, open platform, low cost. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. I thank you very much for that. And, you know, it's nice to hear that from the market. Sometimes we're not as good at being able to say it as we should because, you know, people will email us and call us and say, you know, this is really cool because I need this for my business, not for at home. You know, compared to Zonbu, there's 8 million people using Ubuntu instead of, you know, Gentoo. You know, I can play with this myself. It's just a regular installation of Ubuntu, so, you know, I don't have to, you know, kill myself if I have to support it myself or use it myself. You know, the hardware is pretty simple and easy to use with no moving parts. So, you know, it's just, you know, Canonical and Ubuntu use it as their desktops right now with the Linux Terminal Server project, with their terminal server for Ubuntu to support their customers and their clients. And Google uses Ubuntu internally for their desktops. So it's a compelling story for a businessman that goes, you know, hey, you know, that's good enough for me. These people are using it. It's certified. I know it's going to work with this stuff. So it's compelling enough to get the first part of the process started. And Google Apps was really the biggest catalyst because as soon as that goes in somewhere, you know, unwittingly or wittingly, these people are already in a thin client environment. They're not getting the full advantages because they're still running full PCs with hard drives, sucking up all that power. And, you know, really all they need is a browser. That's it.
So what's the standard warranty, a year on this?
It's a year. For businesses, we provide, you know, RMA replacement, or if they get the support contracts that are decent, then, you know, they don't actually even buy the hardware. We just supply it with the support contract.
We got a question on the RSC. Someone wants to know if the video graphics card can handle OpenGL acceleration.
I don't think so, no. This is not something where you're going to use, you know, Barrel. This is for, you know, pretty much for emerging markets for, you know, running around the internet and doing documents and Google Apps type stuff. You know, you can use GIMP on this, you can play some games and stuff, but you're not going to get 3D graphics or, you know, it's not a gamer's type of box by any means.
Still very cool.
Yeah, it's for the masses. There'll be other stuff that'll come out in the future that, you know, there are LX800s that are out there that fairly soon we'll be able to do, you know, you can run Barrel on, not the actual LX800, but the 900, and, you know, with different boards to make, you know, that type of fun stuff work in the future. It takes a little bit more power and it's a little bit more expensive, but the mass market is where we're focused right now.
Question from the IRC. Is there a downloadable manual for the device?
We've been asked that quite a bit, and there's actually a paper manual that goes out with it. That's a good point. The downloadable manual is something that'll be going up in a week on the .org.
Next question I have for you is, since this device obviously has no CD-ROM drive or anything, or any media capable, or CD-ROM drive, floppy drive, or whatever. What happens if somebody gets this and screws up and ends up, like, hosing the operating system? How would they restore their operating system? I mean, I know how it could be done, but, I mean, what do you guys recommend, or what would you guys tell them to do?
Well, there's different ways, and what we do is there's a small partition, and there's the original install is still sitting in there. So if it, you know, really gets screwed up, somebody can contact us and we tell them to press a few magic keys, and of course it installs and then goes for updates and it's, you know, back to where it started. So that's one way. Number two, on our kulu.org, there's the instructions on how to do a USB install. You can also do a CD, USB CD external install. And there's also something that's really cool that we use for doing these, which is a 3-minute PXE LAN install. And that's what we do here before we ship them. So, you know, we can, some pretty cool stuff out there that you can, you know, do 1,000 of these units with, you know, within 3 to 5 minutes just by going across the network. A dedicated network, ideally. Otherwise, there may be some other PCs out there that have some data go missing on them.
So, you guys image these things in like 3 minutes? That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a PXE install, right? So instead of just pulling it on and then it comes right back off, as soon as you turn it off, it fully installs.
That is sweet. That is really
cool. OEM install, so when you get this unit, it comes up asking you, you know, where are you on the planet, what time zone, what's your login pass. So it's a true OEM install. It's a, you know, enterprise grade.
That is nice. That's a pretty cool project. And Kulu.org is your, that's obviously the community wiki page.
Yep.
And support.
We're going to need an awful lot of help in the future, so we're still trying to figure out how to do that, and there's lots of things we'd like to do, and there's stuff we've had to turn down that's fairly large because we just didn't have the resources. So, you know, anybody that does want to, you know, send off a resume or you know, some information and then follow up with us on occasion is more than welcome to, because there's a lot of projects we come across and we have to turn down because we just simply don't have the resources. You know, somebody wants a point of sale, kind of like a, you know, business in a box type thing, which a lot of people talk about. And you know, putting a point of sale with, you know, open source accounting software, with Sugar, with Asterisk, I think you know where I'm going with this. You know, it's this is absolutely incredible for a business, and that's where things are really, you know, going to be going. In Jamaica, the director of a bank that's in Jamaica, that's a friend of mine, that's. And what we like the idea is that a pure model would be you would give a retailer, like say in Africa or even Jamaica, where there's no infrastructure that goes to him. So unfortunately, a lot of the people don't walk down there because they don't have cash in their pockets to go buy some things to take home. So what we thought of was, you know, take a Kulu box, make it wireless, put everything on you need, and then including a touch screen with the person's, you know, the merchant's products and little icons and stuff. They touch those icons, process the credit card, debit cards, and so on, and it wirelessly, you know, has a connection to bank to reconcile. And then you can, you know, make sure that, you know, the bank makes sure they never have, you know, dead clients. And then the merchant, the model is you don't charge them for the hardware, the software, the support, the VoIP, internet connectivity, the desktop, anything. You just charge them a microtransaction every time that he uses it. And then at the top right-hand corner, it sees high score. High score is your money, real-time, in the bank, as every transaction happens, so the total. Underneath that, you have bonus. Bonus is his leverage at the bank. So with the business he does and how often he does it, it increases his line of credit at the bank. And the government gets their money. You have to have something in it for everybody. 100% collection, and they get it real time also because it's an electronic transaction. So the model is a microtransaction, and that works well for businesses because when you're, you know, a lot of people out there could probably, you know, come to the same conclusion that when you're supporting a customer, the interesting part is a direct relationship to how much business and how many transactions they do to how much you have to support them, whether it be hardware, software. It doesn't matter. So you only make your money off of other people's good fortune, not off their misfortune. And unfortunately, the computer industry as I see it today is a lot like, you know, our healthcare system after two world wars. It's mostly triage, right? The value is your business is not working today and I've got you over a barrel, so pay me. So I was hoping for a better model, and that's what we're trying to do. Have long-term, sustainable, healthy systems for businesses to enable the proprietors to make money so that they don't have to learn what VoIP is and all the rest of the stuff. But quite happily, you know, the community can help in the background and make a really nice living out of supporting it so that It is that seamless.
That's great. I look forward to that.
I have a question. Is Mad Dog going to have one of these boxes at the Ohio Linux Fest that's coming up at the end of the month?
Yeah, Mad Dog's always got boxes with him. So he's got two or three boxes that he's always playing with, and a bunch around his house that he uses for different types of things. His laptop just died on him, but he was up until a little while ago, until this last weekend. He was using his laptop as a terminal server. So I think it was with some VM or even just with some VM. He was running the terminal server project on his laptop and running two or three thin clients, the Kulu boxes, off of that to do a demonstration to show people. So he would show them as thick clients, and then he would show them the environment when they made them thin clients. And, by sharing resources with a decent processor, you can make these things, doesn't matter how big a PC you get. If you are hooked up to a nice, sharing the resources of a big server, these little desktops, these Kulu thin clients are extremely fast when you hook them up to, a terminal server.
This would be also a perfect box for people. You hear about people going out and spending, $2,000-$3,000 on a new computer, and they wind up, browsing the internet, reading their emails, typing up some letters, they're way better off just buying one of these boxes and does all that right off the bat, and it's economical and it's powerful.
Yeah, it does what needs to be done. And if you decide you want it to go faster and you wanted three or four in your house or five, then, you can take the hard drives out, put them in a server, and, do everything centrally if you want it, right? So it's kind of like Lego or Meccano, right? You can continue to use all the parts and build something different at the end of the day if you want to. A lot of people have bought them as thick clients, played with them, and their kids are starting to use it, and then they find out, when they're trying to make their Windows PC work, and they're using Nopix to recover stuff, they decide, I've had enough of this, and then they go and get one of these little boxes for themselves, and it sits next to a PC that usually does gaming, is what we find, and they get more of them, and then they decide they'd like it to be a little zippier, so we're working on a small server that's inexpensive with no fan that'll do, 5, 6, 10 boxes, but it'll make it a much faster experience than one of these with a hard drive. And don't get me wrong, it's pretty quick with a hard drive in it, the way it is. And the one feature people like is because it doesn't make any noise, it's so low power, they leave it on. So as we all know in the community, if you leave Open Office open and Firefox open and other stuff open, it's almost instantaneous, right? Unlike, other environments like Apple and Microsoft, right? So even the boot up process is much less than what it used to be. So whether it be thin client or a thick client, the boot up process is getting faster and faster with Ubuntu. But mostly, people just leave them on. And it's nice to come back to a desktop that's, just there. When you go with Google Apps, you can go from box to box in the house and just go to the Google search page, and on the top right-hand corner it says sign in. You sign in. There's all your documents where you left them off. And you can collaborate with that document with anybody else in the world if you invite them. First, based on read-write access, you've got a shared calendar, you've got email so that when a document comes in, it takes it out of the email, puts it into your document file. You don't have to download it. You didn't have to tell it to do that. It'll even, the CRM, it'll put it together and just make sure it sits there with somebody's account. Make that up with Asterisk, a SIP account, and wow, you can have somebody actually, we're doing our best to eat our own dog food, as you'd say, so that, as we're building out our infrastructure, somebody can call or email us, and up comes the account with everything in the whole history based on the phone number that comes in or the email address or IP address.
I got to see a demo of this besides the videos that you got that you posted on the website. Are you planning to display it at any, Linux convention or show in the near future?
Yeah, we did 360 in Toronto here not too long ago. It was 2 or 3 months ago or something like that. We did the email garden. So I had, I think it was 10 of the boxes out with a server, and a lot of people liked them. But as far as demonstrations go, Mad Dog usually does demonstrations wherever he goes. He's got a presentation, thin clients, fat profits, that he does. And then most people ask him to, you know, see what they recommend, because a lot of people heard of Neo or Wise or, you know, HP, but a lot of those are focused towards, you know, using a different environment. So it's a lot of people are surprised, because, you know, Neos and Wises and Suns and all the rest of them are, you know, fairly expensive for what they are. You could buy a desktop for the same price.
Yeah, they're like $400 or $500, those things.
Yeah, right, to get, you know, less
big clients.
Right? Yeah, exactly, right? And it's really not. My passion is that, you know, I'm a disgruntled user that's dyslexic. So when people say no, it's like saying, go on, as in like on, like tell me more. So, you know, I just, you know, raise capital, keep putting it together, knowing it can be integrated, and keep pushing it forward, because I wanted all the advantages of a dumb terminal, thin client environment, but I wanted a rich environment and responsive, like you had your own personal PC. So I wanted the economics and the convenience of both worlds. And, you know, now we're pretty close to that. And ideally, getting rid of the, I know some people shoot me for saying this, but ideally with getting supercomputing and grid computing up and running, which is, you know, in the near future, you won't even need a terminal server, right? Your updates will simply be something like a virus. It'll just, you know, go out and look for latest updates, you know, try it over in some VMware in the corner, and if it cacks, then it says, no, let's not upgrade to that. And, you know, always make sure that you've got a copy of the OS that's up and running somewhere, including your data being in a separate part of the hard drive, so that you don't run into issues. And these are things that I just haven't seen, you know, been done, except for people that really understand how to do it, but organizations haven't been told what the value is and haven't been sold this. So we just wanted to put it in and turn it into a service. Like when you rent a car, you don't necessarily, you know, get to pick the color and the make and the model and all the, you know, features, but it gets you from, you know, A to B. You know, like Microsoft says, you know, where do you want to go today? Well, I believe Linux and open source is more about saying, what's your destination, and I'll guarantee you'll get you there, right? Instead of starting it on a journey and not having any map, right? It's a little difficult to start a trip like that.
Well, this is a really cool product. We're going to have to shoot an email out to Mad Dog to make sure he could maybe do a little demo for us, because I'd really like to see one of these things in person.
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure he could.
Well, Andrew, we really appreciate you taking the time to come talk to us on the show. It sounds like you guys are doing wonderful work up there, and the best of luck to you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, thanks. Yeah, thanks for making time for me. I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you.
All right, cheers.
Take care.
Have a good one.
Bye.
That was Andrew.
That was good.
Cool stuff, man. Very cool.
Yes, it was. I'm just really curious about what technology he was talking about there with regards to streaming video replacing Flash, and it's used by Apple's iPhone. I'm just really curious. I mean, I have no idea what he's talking about, number one. Number two, I don't think it's Apple's iTV technology, is it?
IPTV?
No, ITV. Not IPTV. I couldn't corner IPTV.
What, that product they sell, man? I don't know, man. I'm not that impressed by that thing.
What product?
That little video box that they sell. I mean...
Well, no, I'm not talking about that, but what technology was he talking about that allows you to... that the iPhone takes advantage of streaming video to it, that Google has been working with Apple, I guess he was kind of hinting at?
It's got to be some kind of compression algorithm or something.
Well, I mean, if it's not being delivered by Flash, how is it being delivered? I mean, how, number one, where is it being streamed from? I mean, I can't see Apple building a technology that's going to run on Linux.
Astronaut says he thinks he meant H.264.
Okay.
That's built into Flash, isn't it? Didn't the newest release from Flash have H.26 technology?
Well, H.264, isn't that just another name for MPEG-4? Or
I think it's Apple's version of MPEG-4.
It's MPEG-4.
It's H.264.
Yeah, standard video compression for MPEG-4 is a suite. Is a standard for video compression, also known as MPEG-4, Part 10, or AVC, Advanced Video Coding.
As a matter of fact, you're using the encoder that's being sold by that main concept company, the people that originally sold that main actor video editor.
Right.
The codec, one of the codecs that they sell, the encoders, I think that's being used by the new Flash version that just came up, the new H.264 playback.
I think Flash, I'm trying to think of whether Flash, I don't think Flash does native 264 support. You can convert. I was under the impression that Flash had to convert the video to Flash video format before it would be play over Flash. Yeah, H.264 is MPEG-4 Advanced Video Codec version, MPEG-4 version 10, or Part 10, I'm sorry, Part 10. But does Linux natively or legally support MPEG-4 or H.264? Bum, bum, bum. I don't know. I know there's a Linux H.264 library. X264. I don't know. Some I have to look up. Guy, people, listeners, educate us some more. X264 is a free library for encoding H.264 AVC video streams. The code is written by... it's released under the GPL. So there is a encoding implementation. I'm pretty sure that there's a decoder, too. Let me see here. Why waste my time just messing around? Aptitude, search, H.264... Oh, I'm on Pat. I'm not on. Jesus, what an idiot! I'm on.
Plays back fine.
What does?
My box. I've downloaded H.264 videos and they play back fine.
Right. Well, is there any? See, that's the thing. Maybe it is H.264. I don't know. QuickTime has an implementation. Doesn't Windows Media Player have an implementation of H.264?
I don't know. I don't use Windows Media Player.
Well, what I'm saying is there's many methods of getting H.264 MPEG-4 video out there. I don't know. We'll have to clear this up in the forums or something. Or somebody send us an email. So we can clear this up. I don't want to spend my time trying to search the web for the answers here. Although
VLC supports H.264, doesn't it? Playback?
Well, I know MPlayer does, and VLC, I believe, does.
Yeah,
FFmpeg probably does it, too.
Yes, it does.
I'm curious, though. If that kind of support is unencumbered, do you know what I mean?
You see that Rogue TR posted this X6264 URL.
Uh-huh.
You go there, and you can see it's a free H.264 AVC encoder. And it's used by a bunch of different applications. FFmpeg, Avid DMux,
yeah,
5.
Yeah, X264. What is required for the playback of that, of MPEG-4? Is that libMPEG-4? There's libMP4 version 2, MPEG-4 video library and tools from MPEG-4 IP. I don't know. Or is that... Yeah, I looked at the Wikipedia article on it. Like I said, I don't want to see...
Google Video uses it.
Again, is it? But is it natively supported? Legally supported? I mean, it's not a codec. Like, what I'm saying is, you don't. It's not like the Win32 codecs that there's possibly IP infringement for using it. You know what I'm? You know what I'm getting at here?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Is it on the up and up?
Right.
Is it legal for us in the United States with, you know, the DMCA to use?
Right.
Yeah, of course, it's technically possible. You know. Question is it legal? That's what you're trying to ask, Dan?
Precisely. But what is, I don't want to start off, I hate when the videos just go. So, let's see. Well, what does, you say Google does, Google Video.
Yeah, if you
video.
Look at that link, videoland.org, developers/x264.html, you scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page, it's people using X264, Google Video, Mobile ASL, Speed Demos Archive, and Task Videos. And it has a whole bunch of applications listed that use it, too. VLC, FFmpeg, Avid DMux, Live Video Editor, Mencoder. A few other ones, too.
Right. Yeah, but all those are, again, like I say, those are encoders. What's the library for playback? What is the library for playback?
Well, but what is VLC uses? VLC uses this.
I don't want the encoder. I want the decoder. What is it called?
You go look at VLC. There you go. VLC. Where's the X264?
Right. VLC. VLC, audio video codecs. Okay, here we go.
FFmpeg. I guess it's FFmpeg. You see the page? You go to videoland.org, developers, VLC, HTML?
Yeah.
You see the list of video audio video codecs?
Right.
Live AV codec, FFmpeg, supports MPEG-4, H.263, WMV.
Right.
That's got to be it.
Let me see here. Look at this. This is a terrible radio. Terrible radio.
We're really prepared, as usual.
Yeah. Well... So I know it was something. Yeah, okay, no. Well, I guess FFmpeg is complete and free internet live audio and video broadcasting solution. FFmpeg. I hate going through this.
Dan, you gotta be prepared, man.
Well, I didn't expect to be talking about this tonight. Anyway, what else is in the news, Pat?
Well, the big news is this Silverlight-Moonlight collaboration. Basically, Moonlight is the people from Novelma Geldiacaza. They have an implementation of Microsoft's Silverlight application, which is their flash killer, supposedly.
Right.
They've announced a partnership agreement. I'll put the link from Mars Technica article where they interviewed Miguel.
Yeah, I know. I posted a couple weeks, about a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, in our forum. I was curious to see, you know, being Silverlight being a Microsoft technology, and being something that they're putting up against Flash, obviously is going to have to do audio and video. And I was curious to see how they were going to handle the format for audio and video, figuring it's got to be some kind of Microsoft format, like Windows Media architecture. And reading Miguel's blog and some of the stuff that came out today, yes, Silverlight, if you look at the format compatibility list, aside from MP3, the only other format supported is Windows Media format. And what Miguel has said in his blog is that Microsoft will be making available binary codecs for Linux users to be able to use those with Moonlight and the Moonlight plugin only. Will not, supposedly not give you the ability to use it in any other application like MPlayer or Video LAN Client to legally use those codecs, but apparently Moonlight itself is being released under the GPL and the LGPL, so you can have a completely free implementation of Moonlight, or you can pull down the Microsoft provided codecs, which, you know, it makes me wonder. If you went with the completely free and not used Microsoft codecs, I mean, you'd have a really crippled version of Moonlight, essentially. I mean, what would the purpose be? There was question as to whether Moonlight would support OGG. Silverlight would support OGG. And from what I gather from reading the Miguel's blog is that extending Silverlight to support different media codecs is strictly based upon the whims of Microsoft, and that OGG support seems to be, if anything, extremely low on the list of stuff that people are putting in as feedback. I wouldn't expect OGG support in the near future, or possibly even ever at all.
Supposedly the Moonlight uses FFmpeg as the engine. Did you read that part?
Well, he said that the current implementation of Moonlight uses FFmpeg as the engine, and what it sounds like they're going to be doing is stripping that out because they cannot release that commercially, distribute it commercially. So I wasn't clear on that myself. Let me go to the page there, bring that up, because I did read that and I had to read it a few times, and I wasn't still 100% sure as to exactly what they're going at. But he had said, this is the quote from Miguel's blog, and it's in our forum, and you can see Miguel's blog. I'll post this into the IRC right now, so you guys know I'm not lying to you. And no, this is a completely safe link. It's Miguel's blog, so don't worry. It doesn't take you to anything inappropriate for all those people who might be concerned. But
everybody cringes whenever Dan posts a URL somewhere.
Yeah, so this is okay. This is what one of the bullet points here. Microsoft will make codecs for video and audio available to users of Moonlight from their website. The codecs will be binary codecs, and they will only be licensed for use with Moonlight on a web browser. Sorry, those are the rules for media codecs, and there's a number down here. One, currently Moonlight video support has been prototyped using the Fabulous and LGPL FFmpeg engine for audio and video. We are unable to redistribute this code commercially due to licensing conflicts. Update. This means that individuals that want to use 100% pure free software setup can do so. We are unable to redistribute this edition, though. Now, I am not clear on what that means. I'm not sure whether that means that they were prototyping using FFmpeg and using, you know, getting codec support for the Windows Media Codec for testing using the in the United States IP infringing Win32 codecs, which technically we're not supposed to use legally. Whether it means that, and they're going to strip out FFmpeg, or and build in the support for the Microsoft codecs, which will be available in binary format from Microsoft, or whether they're going to keep FFmpeg in there. I mean, I wasn't clear on that, and I'm still unclear on that. What's your opinion, Pat? What do you think?
Well, I'm looking at the FFmpeg legal page.
Right.
And it says that it's okay to use it into your applications, but the legality, you might have some issues if you're using it in the commercial product. This is a commercial product, correct?
Well, I don't know. Because it's being...
FFmpeg is LGPL, right?
Right. And Moonlight is being released under... Is it completely LGPL or is it LGPL and GPL? Because I know Mono is under three licenses.
Yeah, Mono's under LGPL,
GPL,
MIT.
And MIT X11.
Right, right. It's a good question. I think we need to talk to Miguel to get some answers.
Yeah, I'm unsure as to what that actually means, whether they'll be stripping out FFmpeg.
We might want to talk to the FFmpeg people, too.
Right. FFmpeg's a really cool tool.
It's phenomenal. It's really phenomenal. I use it with the MythBox has this application called NUV Export. It's like an add-on application that you run from the command line. And what it'll do is it'll take like a MIF recording, and you can export it to a whole bunch of different formats. You can put it out to MPEG-2. You can put it to XVID, DivX, single pass, dual pass, iPod video. Phenomenal. It's a really, really cool application. And he uses FFmpeg on the back end to do all the encoding.
Huh. It is nice. I love FFmpeg.
Yeah, it's great. But also, there was some guy blogged he sent an open letter to Adobe to try to get them the open source Flash. I don't see that happening anytime soon. I think it's a pipe dream.
You never know. You never know.
Yeah, I put the URL to the guy's letter. I don't know. If one positive can come out of this, maybe, is that this lights a fire under Adobe's ass to possibly release a Flash player for 64-bit Linux. Because in Miguel's posting, he was pretty adamant that they're going to support 64-bit systems right out of the box.
Right. Well, see, I don't know. And one of the other things that I was curious about with regards to Silverlight is that, and I suspect, well, I'm wondering here, he said that Microsoft will give access to the test suites for Silverlight to ensure that we have a compatible specification. Microsoft will give us access to the Silverlight specification details that might be necessary to implement 1.0 beyond what is currently published on the web and specifications on the 1.1 version. I'm curious as to whether that places any kind of risk on Moonlight for Microsoft coming back and saying, well, you're infringing on our IP. Even though they're giving them access, does that place them at risk? I mean, is that a written, you know, agreement? Or can Microsoft come back later on down the line and say, well, you have your IP, our IP and your technology there? But on the plus side, Novell is not only making Moonlight available to SUSE, they're also packaging it for other major distributions and in RPM and DEB packages. So that's nice. I mean, you got to give them credit for that. I think. I don't know. Regardless of how you feel about Mono and Moonlight and some of the stuff, I mean, at least it's being released under free software licenses. As long as it doesn't end up being encumbered with Microsoft IP. What do you think, Pat? What's your opinion?
I think we need to see a picture of our new Linux Link Tech Show stickers.
What's that have to do with Moonlight?
Oh, this is better than Moonlight. You want to see a cool picture?
Well, are you going to post it in the...
Check it out. That's Gorgon's laptop. They came today.
And why did Gorgon open them?
Because I told them to. I wanted to see what they look like.
Yeah, that's nice.
Looking pretty sharp, huh?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I don't know. As far as Moonlight, you know, Novell at the end of the day is free to do whatever the hell they please. I think it really boils down to, yeah, this is a Microsoft format. They have a shitty track record when it comes to you know, using it and letting people use it. Maybe they're going to change, you know. You can't hold your breath when it comes to Microsoft, but you can only dream, you know.
I wonder if it's really, really going to be a challenger to Flash. I mean, Flash is so enmeshed in a lot of things, particularly with rich content on the web, rich media content. Will Silverlight be able to topple that giant, or is it going to just be a flash in a pan?
No pun intended.
Yes, no pun intended. And, you know, and speaking of Microsoft, good news is that their Office Open XML standard, or proposed standard, was shot down, didn't pass enough votes, but the process has not ended yet. Pat, you sound like you were about to say something.
I know, I was going to say, you hear all these stories about, you know, Microsoft going out and basically buying votes to push us through. It sounds like, you know, regardless of their best efforts, it didn't happen. So kudos to everybody who voted against it.
Yeah, I really hope that in the near future we could get JZA back on, because he had mentioned the last time he was on, 2 weeks ago, he was going off to Mexico City for the voting process. And Mexico eventually abstained from voting, and I'd be curious to get his take on that whole process there and what he saw going on. Yeah, there was a lot of improprieties with a lot of the different countries. I think, what was it, Sweden was one that had some improprieties during the voting process, and Microsoft trying to stuff the ballot, and rumors that they were pushing partners to pay their way onto the OSI board in their country to actually vote and stuff the ballot box there and get it approved. I don't know if anything has been concretely proven that was the case, but it's kind of sad when stuff like that happens. Very sad, and I'm glad that so far that they have not been able to push through as an open standard their OOXML. I'm curious to see how the next couple of months go, whether we see something drastic happen, some really head-scratching going on with Microsoft being able to turn it around before February 25th through the 28th, when it goes up against the OSI board again. They have the opportunity to have another look at it, and it, I guess the way that it does is if Microsoft can fulfill the requests and I guess the comments that you can vote no with comments, and if they can fulfill the requests of those comments or rectify those comments, that there is a possibility that at that point the another vote could be taken and Microsoft wins OOXML as an open standard. That'll be left to see. I mean, there's speculation that they might pull some shenanigans even before that.
Just wine and dine everybody and take them out to lunch at the local titty bar.
That's it. Well, who knows, you know? I mean, it kind of, you know, cast an ugly pall on the whole process here when that they could actually go in and subvert it in such a manner. It's really, really ugly. Who knows? Who knows? What else is going on, Pat?
Well, I still highly ask, you know, recommend people to go out and sign that petition to help
Main
try
Actor.
To convince Main Concept to open up Main Actor.
I was just over there earlier today, and
it's
it's only
at like 570, I think it was.
Oh, is it? Is it 570? Need a lot more people there.
Yeah, we need a couple thousand at least. Here's the link again. If somebody hasn't signed a petition, please do so. It doesn't cost anything. When you get that little question asking if you want to donate money, just get out of that. Your financials will still be on there.
What, didn't you also say it won't cost you any money, but you'll send them all $5?
Yeah, right.
What's the link? Oh, you posted it in the... I thought you were going to... IP, what is it? iPetitions.com, /main actor/signatures.html. That's some good stuff. Good stuff. Good stuff. I wonder if Jeremy Garcia is going to Ohio Linux Fest.
I don't know. He seems to go to like the more corporate oriented shows.
So you calling him a sellout?
He goes to O'Reilly. No, I think he's at a different place, that's all. Goes to you know, Linux World Expo all the time in London and San Francisco. He goes to the O'Reilly Festival, you know, the O'Reilly Convention, OSCON.
Right.
So he gets around, you know.
So, yeah, that's true. Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, I'll send him an email. Send him an email and find out. Because he's not that far away from Ohio.
He's in Buffalo.
Right.
It's pretty far.
Well, not compared to, you know, going out to O'Reilly.
Yeah.
There's a little difference there.
Yeah, did you hear a lot of Linux Link? Dave Yates is going to drive to Ohio.
Yeah. That's
crazy,
a long drive, man.
That's a freaking hike.
He might as well just, like, save the money and drive over up to Richmond. He's like,
jump on a plane.
Yeah, and jump on that plane. Hell, he could come to my house tonight before. I'll drive him out to Richmond.
That's brutal, man.
That is a long drive. That's going to be a long drive. That's going to be hellish. I'll let Dave Yates sleep out on my porch. I won't let him in my apartment.
You're very generous, man.
That's right. I'll be like, sorry. You can climb up the side and sleep on the porch. You are not coming in my house, you evil man. No, I wouldn't do that. Of course I let Dave Yates sleep in my apartment, crash at my place.
Hopefully he doesn't rip up the copper pipes in your apartment.
Yeah, that's it. That is it. And, you know, I noticed that listening to a lot of the Linux podcasts, they all had one thing in common this past week, and that was somebody had sent them all an email about announcing the petition to open source Main Actor.
Yes, they did, and I thank them for doing that. The guys over at the Linux Action Show, Chess Griffin at Linux Reality. Did Dave mention it? I don't think he did.
I don't know. I didn't listen to Dave. Did Dave put one out this week?
Yeah, today it was out.
Oh, well, I didn't get it yet. I didn't listen. The same episode that the Linux Action Show, played that, and they finally figured out it was you. Did you hear that? Did you hear the one where the guy had the audio and he played the intro to the tech show at the end? That was pretty funny. That was good.
That was funny.
That was hilarious. That was laughing.
Why did they play the Mac Break Weekly music at the beginning? Just to piss them off because they know that those guys hate Apple.
I guess so. I don't know. You had mentioned, speaking of Mac Break Weekly, about them not getting the whole open source concept.
Yeah, there was one guy on there, Andy, what's his name? He was pretty much, calling all, Linux users fanboys and, crying that anything closed is evil, which is not true. I think that's a very, very broad generality, It's too broad to paint everybody who uses Linux in that way, I think. Yeah, you have people who, hardcore, free this, free that, which is fine. That's their choice to be like that, but not everybody is opposed to using closed proprietary stuff, on their Linux system. But everybody's entitled to their own opinion, how wrong they may be.
Uh-huh.
If he's happy with his Apple, God bless him. Better him than me.
Good for him. Good for him. Huh.
Yeah, I was feeling a little masochistic, so I listened to Mac Break Weekly.
Yeah.
They were talking about the iPhone, and then the conversation drifted over to the OpenMoco. And, one guy was like, it's weak. Who knows what's going to happen, blah, blah, blah. Leo Laporte was actually the most open-minded one out of the bunch, it sounded like. So, kudos to Leo.
Yeah. I have to listen to that episode so I can get my ire up. And also, I'm curious to listen to some of the podcasts that the, quote, Microsoft former Get the Facts campaign put out. I saw links to that was in one of the posts on the forum, and I'm excited to listen to those. I was going to listen to them yesterday, but I got caught up in other stuff.
For a good laugh, right?
Yes, it's very interesting stuff. And also on a sad note about that, apparently Palm has decided not to go with the Folio, the Linux-based Palm device that was going to be a small, I don't know, for lack of a better word, like a laptop with a QWERTY keyboard and a bigger screen, but not...
Right, that little 7-inch laptop thingy.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're not going with it. They scrapped it. And it almost... I'm hearing rumors or something along the lines that they are scrapping all their Linux development. Which, kind of sounds very odd to me, because haven't they invested a lot in Linux development for the Palm devices? At Palm Source, isn't that Palm? I have t-shirts from 2 years ago that they were saying, don't worry, the Palm devices are about a year and a half, 2 years away, and the Linux-based Palm devices, and it's kind of, why invest all that effort and just drop it? I don't know. What do you think, Pat? Not a damn thing, do you?
I'm looking forward to that Asus flash-based machine.
Yeah, so am I. That looks pretty cool.
That's the one I really want to check out. What is it, the Asus EEPC or something like that?
Right.
That looks like a cool device. I'm really interested in that one. I'm also interested in this cooler device, man. I really like to see it. I'm going to try to shoot an email to Mad Dog. Maybe he can do a little demo or something, or a birds of a feather session with the cooler. I'd really like to check it out.
On what?
Maybe a demo of the cooler in person at OLF.
He's going to do a session on it? No, you're
going to ask him.
Oh. Well, maybe he could just set it up in our booth and forget about it. Set four of them up in our booth and forget about all four of them. That would be awesome. Okay. I'm sure you agree with me.
I'd like to have one.
Yeah. Yeah. So, did we meet the FARC people last year?
I don't think so.
Who was that other group that was there last year?
That was the Ohio Open Source group or something like that.
Okay.
And the one guy who's like the main guy from that group, he's doing a talk this year, I think.
Okay. But we're supposed to be having a pre-show shindig with FARC. Which means all we do is show up and drink beer and then go to the, what, Mongolian place?
That sounds like a plan.
Well, last year, didn't you end up eating it at, what was it, is it Barley's?
Yes, it was good.
And then we went to the Mongolian place and you just sat there and twiddled your thumbs and drank. And we all had delicious...
Speaking of Ted Hager, man, we should talk to him. Just find out what he's doing these days.
That's true. He's no longer with Novell Open Audio.
Yeah, he's with Bungie Labs now. I'm really curious to see, you know, the type of stuff he's doing. I think he's doing some kind of, like, Web 2.0, like, development application. I think that's what they do, Bungie.
Yeah.
We should talk to him, though. He's a good guy, Ted.
Well, speaking of podcasts and stuff, we need to have the Linux Install podcast people on. But also, Linux Link Radio... Did you listen to any of that?
I actually listened to one episode today. It's funny you mentioned that.
Which is, it's kind of a shame because I really was getting into it. Really good stuff, really good information coming from it. And the last one was released. This was episode 17 was the last one, which is unfortunate because that was really good.
We haven't received a cease and desist yet from them, so...
And I don't think we will receive a cease and desist from them, because we're completely two different entities. I don't know. Going Linux.
Yeah, the Ubuntu OS podcast hadn't come out with an episode in the longest time, and I think they finally released one either today or a day ago.
I wonder what ever happened to Going Linux. I can't. Yeah, Linux World has a podcast. From Don Marty. When was her last episode?
Which one? The Linux World Expo one?
Yeah. They just had one to September 4th, 2007.
Yeah, they pushed back. There was supposed to be a Linux Expo in London, but I think they put it back. They postponed it.
Hmm. Huh. Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to bury some of those, or put them in a graveyard.
Cleanup time.
Yep. Tom, kick them out and get them out of here. This show was brought to you tonight by the HIV, Lincoln Allen, together again. Any last words? Getting there close to the end of showtime and got a song to play tonight. You could probably talk that up.
Yes, well, next week we're going to have Bill Hurd, who is one of the legendary engineers from Commodore. Really looking forward to talking to him and getting some really cool stories from days gone past in the early days of personal computing.
I look forward to that. It sounds really interesting.
Yeah, Bill Hurd's supposed to be a really interesting guy.
That should be some really cool stuff.
Yep. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
What are we listening to tonight here? Warp 11 song.
We're going to hear another Warp 11 song. We're going to hear a song called Old Country Doctor, The Ballad of Bones, which is very different from the other stuff that we played. The other stuff that we played has kind of been like, you know, like rockin' or like punky. This is more bluesy and folky.
Excellent. And you're on a first name basis with those guys, right?
Yeah, they're going to be on the show in October.
Oh.
We're going to have Captain Carl and Lieutenant Kiki.
Excellent. And what do they have to do with Linux?
Absolutely nothing.
Okay.
They just a lot of their core audience are hardcore geeks.
That's good. Well, it'd be interesting to see them anyhow. Listen to what they have to say.
Yeah, you can see them in the movie Clerks 2. Trekkies 2.
Did you just see that movie Clerks 2 recently?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
Actually, that's on my list of movies to see.
It's a good movie. I liked it.
Actually, I did see it. I'm sorry. Yeah, I did see it.
Well, what is it then? Did you see it or not?
Yeah, I did see it. That's the one where they're in the fast food place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
It was good. Not as good as the first one, but it was pretty good.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Go see Superbad. Well, you probably can't go to the movies.
No, I got a baby here, man.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. That kind of makes it difficult to go anywhere. How's your son doing?
Pretty good. We're going to baptize him this weekend.
That's good. How many weeks old is he now?
Weeks? He's 4 months old.
Yeah, well, 4 months old. Weeks, months.
It goes by quick.
Yeah, it does. And, you have two sons, right?
Yep, two boys.
And the older one is, I'm trying to think, three?
Three and a half.
Three and a half.
Yep, it's going to be four in November.
That's good.
Yep, they keep us busy here.
All right. Well, this is episode 208. Thank you very much for listening, everybody.
And we'll see you next week.
Yes, we will.
Good night.
Have a good one. And this is Warp 11, Old Country Doctor. Enjoy.
Anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up.
Just shut up. It's over.
That was a damn good song.